Happiness. That's what everyone wants, isn't it? But is it overrated? Well, a recent article entitled Happiness is Overrated, The Secret Life of a Tiger Mother, says happiness for children, in effect, might be. You really need to produce kids that have done their best, rather than a kid that's just happy every day. Not everyone has that view. But let's go first to the tiger mum, and then we'll go to one of her good friends, an anti-tiger mum. Jenna Price and Christina Ho, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Amanda.
Now, Jenna, you're the tiger mum.
I am the tiger mother.
I have to tell you, I'm in love with you. It's not I don't like you, Christina, but I'm in love with tiger mums. I think they do, provided they don't go too far, they do a good job. What's your story?
So I decided, my mother was a tiger mother. She and my father met in a displaced persons camp after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of expectations for how their children would behave and how they would achieve at university. And so we did the work and we achieved at university. And so I just copied exactly what my mother did, but with slightly better English.
Yeah, okay. So you make your kids do the homework?
So they're all adults now, and they were mocking me relentlessly when this story came out. But yes, they had to do their homework. We didn't follow the whole Benjamin Spock, Penelope Leach mode of parenting, which is, you know, let children be children, choose whatever they like. We had schoolwork, food put in front of them. If they didn't like that food, they didn't get to eat. And, you know, pretty quickly we had no arguments about food and no arguments about homework until they got to, you know, puberty. And then there were more arguments, but I was pretty insistent. And usually my husband and I won because, you know, we had the keys to fun as well as the keys to schoolwork.
Yeah, good thing. Well, my mother used to say, and I've got plenty of friends younger than me whose mothers or grandmothers used to say, you'll eat what's in front of you and you'll like it. That's a reasonable proposition to say to a child, I think.
Well, I never said to them you needed to like it, but I needed to say, this is what I've made. I'm not making any more. If you don't like it, let's move on.
That's fair enough. Well, perhaps my mother was a bit tough saying, and you'll like it. I was never asked to eat oysters or things that children would obviously find repulsive. But in terms of homework, I say I'm in love with tiger mums, but do you ever do your kids' homework? Did you ever?
God, no. I have better things to do with my time than do my children's schoolwork, but I certainly impose standards on them. And so they would redo bits. They would have arguments with me. I would say this wasn't good enough. They would do it again. We had Latin. We had maths. When I couldn't sufficiently help them with their maths, they went to maths coaching. Now, these are the kinds of things that Christina thinks are absolutely shocking. When she discovered that my children went to maths coaching when they were little, her eyebrows just left her forehead.
Well, I get it. But look, Christina, I'm about to come to you. Mm-hmm. But can I share with both of you a story I remember from when I was a child? There was a TV show called Leave It to Beaver. And it was one of those pathetic, sickeningly sweet American sitcoms. It was just terrible. And Beaver was the youngest child. And he had to do a project. I don't know what he had to do, something he had to make. And when he went to school, all the other kids were sneering at him because his really didn't look too good. And he won the prize because the teacher said to most of the kids going around the class, oh, did your mum help you a bit with this? Oh, yeah, right, okay. And Beaver was the only one who could say, no, I did it all myself. So he got the prize. And I always remembered that. My mother used to say, no, I'm not going to do your homework. That's your job. Now, Christina, what do you say?
Well, I mean, look, there's many definitions of tiger parenting. And if we go by Amy Chua's book, she was the one who wrote The Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
She sat with her kids while they were doing their homework. She sat on the piano stool as they were doing their practice, didn't let them get up to go to the toilet, didn't let them get up to eat, threatened to burn all their stuffed toys.
They probably called her Velcro.
Yes, and I think, you know, we have many terms for these kinds of parents. Sometimes they're called helicopter parents. I guess that is the extreme form of tiger parenting, which I wouldn't imagine that Jenna would, you know, subscribe to all of those really extreme elements. I guess my main issue, though, is that when you look at the gap in what kids are achieving in terms of their education, we have growing gaps between kids who are from families with well-educated parents versus those with less well-educated parents.
Yes.
And so it's really, it's up to schools to be the equaliser, to give all kids in this country opportunities to excel. And the more parents get involved in that, the bigger that gap is going to be. And I guess that's my problem with, you know, the minister saying that parents need to lift their game and get more involved. Not all parents are going to be equally equipped to do that.
So can I ask a question? Sorry.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
But
jump
Chris,
in.
Why is it that my parents, who had no education and were straight from a displaced persons camp, how did they get to be tiger parents, and how did they get to be able to support me to be, you know, now halfway through a PhD? How is that possible when they didn't have the cultural capital that you're talking about?
And look, there are many, many success stories like yours, Jenna, and
Yay.
Well done to your parents and
I
well done
them.
To you. But if you look at the current statistics, you know, on who's doing well and who's not, kids who are arriving on refugee humanitarian visas are generally not doing very well in school. A lot of that obviously is to do with English language and to do with trauma, but it's not the case that just because you have that plucky, courageous kind of outlook that your kids are going to do well. You were very lucky.
She's about to tell me that I'm a terrible individualist, but, you know, surely there are ways of trying to spread the kind of way that my parents operated. I mean, how would you go about doing that? How would you go about making the playing field a bit fairer?
Well, can I just jump in there and ask, before we go to the question that you want to ask, Jenna, which is, you know, how do we make the playing field more level, and that is by getting more parents to participate. Christina, can I put this question to you? Do you think you can look a kid in the eye who comes from what we'll call a reasonably well-off family, it might be middle class, upper middle class in socioeconomic terms, and say, we don't think your parents should be able to do or should do anything extra to help you be the best you can be. You've just got to do it yourself. I get the gap you're talking about, and nobody wants that gap to be there. But do I want the child of a vaguely well-off family to pay a price for that? No, I don't.
Sure, and I would agree, absolutely. Of course we want all children to excel to, you know, the level that they're able to with all the support that they're able to gather around them. But I don't think the onus is on parents to be addressing that gap, you know, in the achievements of less and more resourced families. It should be up to our education system to be equalising those opportunities. Perhaps the difference between, you know, when Jenna or when I was growing up was that, you know, we didn't have this amount of competition, of hierarchy, of, you know, so-called school choice. The system has become so market-oriented. We have become education consumers. We all go school shopping. Well, that is if we are, you know, well-educated, middle-class, can speak English. The kids that lose out from that are the kids of families where they're not resourced enough to make those strategic decisions.
Well, I don't disagree with that as a principle. And presumably, Jenna, you don't disagree with that as a principle either, nor in practice. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about if we've got an education system that does treat kids equally, are parents okay to step in and try and encourage, promote, whatever, bribe their children into focusing on their future?
Well, I guess the thing I would say about my own children is that they had a lot of opportunities, but I also know that Chris's kids have quite a lot of opportunities. So I guess what, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm putting words in your mouth, Chris, but I guess you're trying to make sure that the opportunities flow to all the kids of all areas and all backgrounds so that they get the chance to, you know, read as well, do science as well, be as numerate. I mean, how do we make that happen? How do I share my cultural capital or my kids' cultural capital with kids who don't have those benefits of the nagging tiger mother?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is really the question. And I think the answer has to be with the comprehensive public education system that we have. So, you know, I mean, I talk to a lot of kids who have been lucky enough and hardworking enough, for instance, to get into a selective school. I myself went to a selective school and I know the kinds of opportunities and benefits that accrue from that. But for every kid who gets into a selective school, there'll be 10, 20, 30, however many really gifted and talented kids who have missed out. So I think really the answer relies on comprehensive public schools to be able to give those opportunities. And that's where I think the policies around school choice and competition have really failed disadvantaged kids.
Are you saying that we shouldn't have private schools and Catholic schools and selective schools?
Well, look, there's a lot of different ways that you can organise an education system. The way that we've organised ours in recent decades has been to increase hierarchies and increase gaps between well-resourced and less-resourced schools. And yes, selective schools, Catholic schools, private schools have benefited enormously from that policy regime at the expense of the comprehensive public school.
Right. Now, Christina, you don't believe in tiger mums. You think basically children should be not left to their own devices. You don't put it that way. You won't go that far, I don't think. But you do say that it's up to the school and from there on, you know, it's up to the child, I suppose. But then you don't like selective schools either. So you want all kids going to the same sort of school.
Yes, ultimately, yeah. I'd love our education system to be able to provide excellent quality public education in every suburb, in every city and town in our country, so that every kid can walk to their local public school and be confident that they'll get an excellent education. The way that our system works is that we are segregating children on the basis of merit, supposedly. When you look at the kinds of figures about which families are sending their kids to, for instance, selective schools, it's hard to imagine that there aren't any, you know, kids from poor backgrounds who are gifted and talented. They're not in our selective schools. Our selective schools are full of families that are very, very well resourced. So I'm not sure that there is a genuine meritocracy going on there.
Yeah, I get your point. I'm talking with Jenna Price, self-confessed tiger mum, and her mate, Christina Ho, who doesn't agree with that, despite the fact that they're very good friends. Christina, the question of selective schools. I don't disagree with the principle that you enunciate, that every child should be able to walk down the street and go to a school that can bring out the best in them and they have an equal chance. But given that some kids are attuned, if you like, to an academic education more than others, I personally think those kids are underrated. They've got other contributions to make. I think too many kids are encouraged to go to university, so let's put that aside for another day. What do you say to the argument, or two arguments that people might raise? One, when you've got really bright kids, if they're always coming top, there's no great incentive for them, and we need to put them all together so they can compete against each other. And the other side of that, which is all very well for you to say, don't have selective schools, put them all in the same class. What if you're the kid that always comes bottom? Don't you think it's good for some of those kids to have all those really focused and intellectually bright kids moved out and the rest of the kids can get on with being normal?
So I'm going to barge in here and say that one of my children went to a very seriously selective academic high school. She did not come top of the class, and that was actually really good for her because she learnt to strive. She got a lot of, I think I'm a pretty hopeless tiger mother, really. And she was in a classroom with people whose parents were much better tiger parents than me. And she learned a lot from them. So I think it's good to have a bit of modelling. And actually, you know, the way Chris puts it, where you've got kind of entire groups where one can learn from each other, that's maybe not such a bad thing after all, in terms of when we want the outcomes for them all to be good, to be able to be the best they can be. Whereas, you know, when you've got all the smart kids together, they're not sharing. And I don't think it holds them back either to have, you know, people that they're teaching in a classroom.
I mean, definitely there's a lot of kids who will thrive in a very competitive, academically selective environment. But we don't know, and the figures don't show that that happens for everyone. We don't know what value add is happening in these selective schools when you have extremely bright kids coming in from year 7. Oh, surprise, surprise, they do really well in year 12. Well, how much is that to do with the school? How much is it to do with themselves? What we do know is that there are serious mental health issues that do plague some kids that go to selective schools because they're not the kind of kids that thrive in that ultra-competitive environment. And there are a lot of kids who would be probably better off being in their comprehensive local school, even if that means that they're the big fish in the little pond. That has a lot to do with people's confidence who might, you know, be lacking in it. It also provides an amazing role model for the other kids, you know. The kids who are at the bottom of the class, if there's been a brain drain away from their school because all of the top kids have been siphoned off to the selective schools, we're missing out on those kids being exposed to, you know, the hard workers, the kids who have parents who are committed to education. There's a lot that's lost in those comprehensive high schools and primary schools when you have gifted kids all segregated away.
Well, Jenna Price and Christina Ho, aren't we lucky that we live in a country where we can have a very pleasant conversation with, I think, quite different views, actually, about what should happen with kids. I have to say, Christina, I'm still a bit on Jenna's side.
I thought you might be, Amanda.
I'm a bit on Jenna's side. Well, only because, you know, when kids misbehave, I think, oh, well, why isn't that woman a tiger mum?
I have to tell you that I'm just going to interrupt here to say that Chris's kids are amazingly well behaved.
Well, that's a good thing then.
And it's not to do with being a tiger mother or a free range mother.
Well, in any event, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Tiger mumming or not. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.